Hello and welcome to The Opening Bell, the Boxing News podcast. My name's Matt Christie. I'm joined, as usual, by John Dennan. There's another big heavyweight fight on the horizon this weekend. People are largely favouring Anthony Joshua over Dillian White in an event that's going to be on Sky Box Office. Now, you've spent a bit of time at the open workouts this week, John. You've also spent a lot of time in the heart of this rivalry for a while now.
I started this fight.
Apparently you started this fight. First of all, for people that don't know, tell us how you started this fight.
So Dillian beat Anthony Joshua a long time ago in the amateurs. Apparently they're all cool. Dillian had lent him a pair of trousers on a Klitschko training camp, which is, you know, what is an olive branch if it's not a pair of jeans for a night out in Austria? But in an explosive Boxing News feature, I spoke to Anthony about their amateur rivalry and some of the comments within that article. I'm not quite sure if it was stuff I was saying or stuff Anthony was saying, but anyway, it infuriated Dillian. The trash talking began, it fueled this personal grudge, and now it's all my fault that the people of Britain are going to have to spend whatever it is, £16.95 to watch it on Sky or Box Office. So sorry about that.
There was always a feeling, wasn't there, though? I mean, because Dillian turned pro in 2011, and then when Anthony Joshua came out of the Olympics with a gold medal, and suddenly he was one of the highest prospects, not just in Britain, but in the world, there was a feeling that this would be a domestic matchup down the line if White could kind of produce the goods and prove himself. Do you think White has done that so far? And let's remember that his career has been interrupted in the middle of it. He got 16 professional wins, 13 by knockout. I mean, if you take the whole history out of it, if you take the fact they fought when they were both very, very inexperienced amateurs, and you take out Joshua's gold medal, if you just look at their professional records alongside each other, Joshua's body of work is far more impressive.
What, just as a pro?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably beaten better people. Like, Kevin Johnson was a good win, especially in the style that he did it. I think Dennis Baktov was a good win as well. And also, yeah, it's the way Joshua's been, you know, knocking out the people put in front of him that has really impressed. So yes, he's looked more impressive, but I think this is still a good fight. You know, Dillian's an unbeaten British heavyweight. It sort of makes sense. And, you know, he can whack, so there is an element of danger. So it's, you know, fighting Gary Cornish wasn't a bad fight, and I think Dillian's a lot better boxer than Gary Cornish. I think on paper it's still a really good British heavyweight title fight, and then it's got the added appeal of their grudge, their sort of backstory. People do love a story.
We've spoken in the past about this fight. We spoke possibly even up to a year ago, and you were not sold. And please correct me if I'm wrong, but you were not sold on Dillian White as someone who could potentially upset Joshua in the future. You hadn't been overly impressed with his form as a professional. I sense that there is a bit more faith in him from you recently. Can you tell me why?
I suppose I'm starting to think he's got a chance when I didn't before, because the bouts his professional fights I'd been at, he'd always looked a bit, you know, he hadn't performed great, he'd done what he needed to do, but he'd taken a few shots along the way, and I just thought, you know, against Anthony Joshua, you don't want to be coming in taking shots. But maybe it's just he seems so relaxed and confident, and maybe that's what made me start to think, does he know something I don't? And he does hit hard, so there is there is always a chance, especially at heavyweight.
You mentioned there that he takes punches. His most recent performance, I believe, was against Brian Minto, where for large parts of it he was impressive. The left hook in particular was impressive. But there were times when, let's face it, Brian Minto's a name, but he's shot worn.
Yeah,
and seen better days.
And a lot smaller than Dylan.
Exactly.
So it's more like he was hitting Dylan with shots. He was hitting him with sort of right hands over the top, and yeah, they were bouncing off. Why? I don't think he really hurt him, though he might have made it a little bit uncomfortable. But Dylan did not look impressive that night. And that was on the same bill where Joshua was flat in Cornish pretty quickly.
It's tempting to kind of, although it's undoubtedly, as well as your involvement, but the biggest catalyst for this whole grudge is that amateur contest.
Yeah, I think that's what people are interested in, it, the fact that, you know, he does hold this win over Joshua.
It's tempting just to kind of, looking at it as objectively as you can, to just think, well, surely, I mean, bear in mind, this is 6 years ago now. So much has happened since. Looking at that footage of the amateur fight, whereas White, in terms of style, is still recognisable, Joshua, in so many ways, is not.
Yeah.
I'm not saying for 1 second that White hasn't improved since then, of course he has. But Joshua has almost been transformed.
Yeah.
Since then.
Joshua was very raw back then, and his rate of progression has been sort of incredible.
Will that play on Anthony Joshua's mind? White has been saying that Joshua is weak-minded, that it'll all, you know, he'll expose this on the night. Is it a realistic issue? Is it a factor that we should take into consideration that if after two or three rounds Dillian White is still there and starting to pose some problems, the thought at the back of Anthony Joshua's mind could start to take over, that this man has beat me before and he could do it again?
I mean, sometimes in boxing it only just takes a little bit of doubt to sort of splinter someone's confidence and change everything. You think, so George Groves, like when George Groves boxed James DeGale was at the time, you know, thought to be way ahead of where George was. And I think the psychological battle really helped George Groves. And sort of, you know, DeGale didn't fall apart, but definitely ended up boxing Groves' fight, sort of fell into his game plan. But in this case, so that's a possibility, but I don't see it in this case. I think so much has happened since. And, you know, I spoke to Joshua before his public workout, and he seemed, you know, intensely relaxed about it, and was saying that he didn't even think Dylan was, you know, taking too much. Like, deep down, he didn't think Dylan was taking too much from the amateur win, because, well, they've both changed since then, especially Joshua. But yeah, so it is that, you know, the psychological aspect could be a factor, but I just doubt it will be.
You mentioned there about George Groves and James DeGale. It's perhaps the most recent and famous example but they were at completely different stages of their amateur development.
Well, exactly, and they boxed in the ABAs. So,
exactly.
So Anthony and Dylan were boxing, not even in the novice championships, right way before then.
But also you could see, and I remember being at the press conference when Groves DeGale was announced, and DeGale was quite calm about the whole thing, and at that point DeGale was almost looked unstoppable.
Yeah. And was that after he'd beaten Paul Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so he just... Yeah. You know, he'd race to a British title.
So DeGale was quite calm, but you could almost sense that just George Groves being in the same room as him was starting to agitate. And as the fight got closer and closer, DeGale's behaviour changed, and he became a very unpopular figure for a while as a consequence of his pre-fight behaviour, and he certainly, as you say, fought that fight. From what I've seen of the build-up to Joshua and White, there doesn't seem to be anything like those levels of irritation in Anthony Joshua. He does seem to be pretty calm, pretty cool, and pretty determined, like he always has been. He seems like this is all. There doesn't seem to be any evidence of it affecting him at all. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I think there's a bit of needle between them. I think there is a genuine, not hatred, but certainly distaste. I think they sort of bridle in one another's presence. Though the first press conference, they were sort of in the same room at the same time, was a press conference before the Joshua Cornish, Dylan White, Brian Minto sort of show, and they sort of started going at it a bit then. And they had a sort of mini run-in before the weigh-in for that fight. But at that time, it was White who seemed a bit more agitated, and it was Josh who seemed more in control of his emotions. Though I do think, you know, with two big guys who are about to fight, you've got to be careful that things don't get out of hand and that they're not sort of, you know, you don't shove them head to head too much. So you don't want the fight to start before they get in the ring. But I don't know what Tyson Fury has made me not know what to think anymore. Because before the Klitschko fight, Klitschko seemed so assured and so confident that if anyone, it was Tyson who was the more agitated, emotional one. And yet, once the fight started, Fury's confidence was there to see, and it was the doubt that sort of seeped into everything Klitschko was doing.
We're very lucky to get the access that we get and to go along to all these, particularly during fight week. It's a fascinating experience. At the same time, it can play tricks on your mind, can't it? You can kind of start to look a bit too deeply into things and go against what you were thinking in the first place. Like recently for Cotto Alvarez, by the time at the start of the fight, I'd gone full circle and I thought Cotto was gonna take Alvarez to school.
Because before you left for Las Vegas, you were arguing that Alvarez might just walk through Cotto.
Yes, exactly, and it's that that he can do. And out there, Jim Lampley actually was saying about Cotto Alvarez. He was saying that he spent time with both of them, and he spent so much time in the build-up in the week leading up to with both of them. He had absolutely any idea of who he thought was going to win had gone as a consequence of the time he'd spent with them both, and that can happen. The other thing as well is, for me in this, which I find really, really interesting, is initially with this fight, I thought Dillian White was kind of running his mouth a bit, referencing the fact that he'd beaten him before, referencing certain things about Anthony Joshua's character just to get the fight. Didn't really think that he believed that he was going to win. Now, from what I've seen, I'm under no illusion at all that Dillian White is certain that he's going to win this fight. And as a consequence of that, that makes him a very, very dangerous man, because from what I've seen, all 14 of Joshua's previous opponents have gone in with a bit of a, I'll do my best, but, you know, kind of attitude. Whereas White is going into this thinking, right, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to win. And I think Joshua, don't get me wrong, Joshua is an amazing prospect, very, very talented individual with admirable drive and, you know, hellacious punching power. But that element of intimidation can be such a massive, massive driving force in victory. You look at Mike Tyson's reign of terror, the vast, vast majority of fighters that were in there, the fight had already been lost before the first bell. Then someone like Tony Tucker went in thinking he could win. He gave him a really tough fight. But I think Buster Douglas was probably the first in 4 years who went in thinking he could win. Now, I'm not saying we're going to have a Buster Douglas type versus Mike Tyson type fight. But what I am saying is that Dillian White's belief in himself makes this contest very, very interesting indeed.
Yeah, yeah. And he just seems filled with confidence. You're right, he believes he can win. It doesn't mean he's going to win, but at this moment he seems to have complete faith in himself. But you know, with Klitschko until recently, now he's lost. But before then, you know, a lot of his opponents were very confident before the fight. But it's just once they're in there with him, and Klitschko's so big and effective at what he does, it's a different story. So it's kind of like the first round, how the first round goes, is going to be decisive for how the rest of the fight will go.
How much of a shock would it be to you if You came back from Dusseldorf kind of, you know, dumbstruck for quite a while, the whole...
I think I still am. Yeah, what to make of it all?
How would, if White was to beat Joshua, how would that compare in terms of shock level to what Tyson Fury did to Vladimir Klitschko?
I might be less shocked than Fury winning, just because, you know, Joshua is still at a very early stage of his professional career, whereas Klitschko was just an established champion and so good at what he does. I'm giving White more the sort of puncher's chance, but maybe you can just see it. If Joshua's taller, he's punching down, reaching with the right hand, maybe he'll leave himself open to a big left hook. We haven't really seen anyone punching with Joshua, and Joshua's been attacking them. Normally Joshua attacks and they try and sensibly defend themselves, and it doesn't work out. So I do think he's got a chance, whereas before Klitschko Fury, I thought Fury might be a handful, but I just didn't expect him to win on points in Germany and to sort of, you know, outbore Klitschko in a way, or outbox him and go for like a points and go for a points victory. It was almost a tactic I didn't expect, and I didn't expect him to be able to pull it off. And even once the final bell had sounded, you know, looking at my notes, I thought Fury deserved to win. He was a couple ahead, but I didn't expect the judges to not give it to the champion. And then Michael Buff said, from the United Kingdom. I was thinking, what?
It was.
Klitschko's not from the United Kingdom.
We've spoke to a few people this week regarding Joshua White, and there is still, I mean, we've struggled to find anyone that will go on record as saying Dillian White's going to win. Why is he such an outsider? And when I checked the odds the other day, he was, I think, 8-1 underdog, which in a fight that's got so much intrigue are long odds.
Yeah.
Why is White such an outsider? Why would it be a shock if White was to beat Anthony Joshua?
I suppose the fundamentals are all on Joshua's side. Like, you know, he's a taller man, he can hit hard at range, so Dillian's got to try and get through that. And Dillian's defence doesn't seem the most solid. Joshua seems a bit sharper, certainly offensively. Plus he's got the better amateur background. He's the one who won an Olympic gold medal, and he has looked better as a pro. So I think he's got all the sort of fundamentals on his side. Like, you've got to pick Joshua to win.
If you're picking Dillian White to win, are you betting on an instinct rather than any fact? What has Dillian White got in his makeup that could potentially win him this fight?
I suppose you're betting on his big left hook, on his power. Dillian's, it'd be quite interesting to, because, like, Joshua's taller, But Dylan's arms look really long, just watching him on the pads yesterday, so it'd be quite interesting to know what their reach is for both of them. So is Dylan at such a massive disadvantage? Maybe you think it's just going to be a case of styles and that Dylan has the right ingredients to beat Joshua, and maybe you think Joshua's had it easy as a professional, been very well matched, and now he's got someone where the fight's being made because people are intrigued by it, and not because it's a fight that's been made to just sort of shape Joshua along the path of his early development. So I think, you can make a case for White. I think the much more convincing one is arguing for a Joshua win. But I wonder, well, like we were talking yesterday about Luke Campbell, Tommy Coyle, which is sort of a comparable fight, isn't it? In the sort of, the Olympic champion against a local rival. And I would probably, I would give Dylan White more chance against Anthony Joshua than I gave Tommy against Luke Campbell. And yet, Tommy, he wasn't really threatening to win the fight, but he certainly wasn't just wiped out early on, as I might have thought he might have been.
The other talking point around this fight, of course, and we have to mention it, is the fact that it's on Sky Box Office. Now, I think we both agreed back in October, I think we spoke about it, when it was kind of up in the air whether or not this was actually going to be a box office event. We both said that we would have much preferred to have seen this on your standard Sky Sports platform, particularly at the respective stages of their careers. I think we can understand why it's on box office. Does it feel a bit more like a box office event now to you?
Now it's happening. I like all the build-up stuff. The sort of pre-fight workouts we've had, the big press conference we'll have, give it that sort of big fight feel like you have when, for sort of major events in the sport. I do still think it's a shame that it's pay-per-view, in that there is a business case for it. They're probably like Joshua, he is really popular. He does get big viewing figures. He's one of British boxing. He's probably British boxing's biggest star.
Yeah.
Just in how well known he is, that people want to see him fight. But I do think it's a risky move. Because if it ends quickly, if the customers aren't satisfied, it relies on a risky move for Sky, because if their customers aren't satisfied, are they going to want to buy a pay-per-view next year? Are as many people going to want to buy Quigg Frampton Quigg if they don't enjoy this one? And I think if this was on a regular Sky channel, the audience for it would be huge, and it would sort of, I don't know if it will pan out like this, because they sort of throw a lot of promotion for a box office event, but you could argue it would be in Joshua's, or it would be in the winner's longer term interest for as many people as possible to see this particular fight. And it's Christmas, and it is a British title fight. It would be nice if the whole country, or as many people as possible who had Sky, could see it. Sort of like he won his Olympic gold medal in front of the world, so it'd be nice to for him to win the British title in front of as many Brits as possible.
How likely is it? You mentioned there that it could be a potential disaster for Sky Box Office if it does turn out to be a mismatch.
Yeah, but I'm not so sure. I don't know, because I quite, I like a boxing match that, that isn't just a slugfest. It's like, has technical skill. I've probably said it before that I didn't, I quite like Mayweather-Pacquiao, 12 rounds, high skill level, but
I think I think a scenario like Mayweather-Pacquiao is different though, isn't it? I think the one that I'm kind of thinking more along the lines of is if this turned out to be a David Haye versus Audley Harrison type debacle, where a lot of people were suckered into the competitiveness of that matchup as a consequence of, let's face it, Audley Harrison's rather engaging gift of the gab.
Yeah.
And again, there was a grudge there that stemmed back a long, long time. So if we were to see a fight like that, could that be damaging to the sport?
Well, I think it'll take a lot because to damage of,
because
the
of
sport.
The, because of the platform?
Yeah, it might not be great for this particular business model. But then if there's like a big crunching knockout, even if it happens quickly, are people going to walk away from that going, oh, that was amazing? So many people saying, oh, Alvarez crushing Kirkland was amazing. I was thinking, I mean, was it? He was just there to be hit. I don't think, you know, I think White is going to come to fight.
Ideally, what would... Try put your Sky Box Office hat on, put your Adam Smith hat on, and from Sky's point of view, what would be the ideal scenario? A 3 or 4 round Hagler Hearns type slugfest, a little bit similar to their amateur contest, but a little more polished.
Funny you say that. Literally, if they had that amateur contest, people probably would love it because it would just be two big blokes duking it out. I think if I was the Sky head honcho, you'd want White to look, you know, because yeah, Joshua is sort of Sky's guy there. You know, they've been sort of telling his story since he turned pro. They probably want White to land one big punch and Joshua to take it, and then Joshua to do something devastating, and then maybe you've got a big, you know, indestructible star on your hands that's on course for a huge, huge showdown with Tyson Fury. But what do I know? I'm just some guy with a pen.
I am really looking forward to the fight. I always look forward to this one.
I think I'm lucky enough to be covering it for Boxing News, so I'm going to be there. But, you know, I might grumble about it being... Well, I suppose I just did grumble about being on pay-per-view, but I would buy it. I wouldn't want to miss this, especially because I think, you know, yes, I expect Anthony Joshua to win, but whoever wins this is going to be, you know, he's going to go on to big things in British boxing, and heavyweight boxing in this country is going to be massive next year, with Fury, with David Haye coming back, with the winner of this one.
If White was to win, does he automatically become as popular as Joshua or not?
It's hard to say if he'll be as popular as Joshua, because I think people have really sort of taken to Joshua in the way he conducts himself.
There's quite a longer term relationship building with Joshua as well that stems back for the vast majority to 2012.
Exactly. So, you know, the Joshua winning the Olympics was a really sort of heartwarming story at the time that people were really intrigued by. He had, you know, big crowds in London cheering him for each of those contests. And I think before the games, people were getting aware of him because he was favoured to win the gold medal. I don't know if he was the bookies' favourite, but certainly Boxing News thought he was going to do it. So I think people were aware of him just in the build-up before the games, and obviously winning the Olympic gold. I think it was the boxing, as I remember, was the last. It was sort of the last sport to be completed.
Yeah,
so he sort of won the gold for Britain on the final day of the whole games, and it was a really good Olympic Games. So you know, so he that does. That does mean that is part of his popularity and the reason why a lot of people like him. But if White wins, he might not be as big, but he will suddenly become a huge name because he will forever be the conqueror of Anthony Joshua. And, you know, in boxing, you can become a sensation for good or ill overnight, as Tyson Fury demonstrated, you know, over the last fortnight.
If White wins, is a rematch inevitable? You sense if Joshua wins, that'll be the end of the rivalry.
Yeah, unless it's controversial. It would make sense if there was, you know, a rematch pretty soon, but, you know, with David Price, it didn't work instantaneously rematching the guy who had beaten him, even though everyone thought he was sort of, you know, just a freak loss first time around, and you get it right the second time. So maybe that's shown at an early stage of your career, you don't want to go straight into a rematch. Maybe different with Klitschko, you know, more experienced, obviously more advanced in where he was. But maybe for a prospect, you don't want to go straight into a rematch with a conqueror. Because, you know, if Joshua loses, it'll seem like, okay, Dylan White's the man now, he's got his place. But, you know, a loss doesn't have to be the end of the world. And he's still got, you know, he would still have all the potential he had beforehand. So the loser will come back from this fight.
Joshua is the favourite, presuming all goes to plan from his point of view. How loudly will the drums start banging for a showdown with Tyson Fury, given the fact that Joshua is very much in the nation's hearts, and for whatever reason, Tyson Fury is kind of, his character is being assassinated from all angles.
Yeah, and
at
you know,
the moment, and all of a sudden, you've just got an event beyond anything I'd have experienced in my time in boxing. Joshua Fury would be huge, but even if he was to walk through White, even if he was to come through a few scary moments and prove he could last into the eighth, ninth round, even if he won over the on points, he's still surely a long way from Tyson Fury's level, isn't he? But the public at large, the casual fans, would then admit that'd be all they'd want to see, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and maybe, you know, the demand will dictate having that fight sooner than, you know, than so what Anthony Joshua would be would have had 15 pro fights. Not exactly time normally to have a world title fight, but there would be the demand for it. It would be massive, you know, and it is, you know, of people are more complicated than being a good guy and a bad guy. You know, no one's completely a saint, no one's completely a sinner.
Completely not.
But it is, people also do love that story, and that's how that fight would get be portrayed. You know, not just in the boxing press, but it would be a huge fight in the mainstream media. It would be covered like that. So it would be a massive event, and a fight that big, you know, why not just do it? You know, and he is pretty good, Anthony Joshua, and there's not that much, as in, it's like the top heavyweights seem quite far ahead of the rest of the pack. So who do you fight to get ready for Tyson Fury? Like, you know, he's a very difficult, you know, the way he boxes as Klitschko, he's a very difficult style to beat. Klitschko didn't find anyone to get him ready for him. That was just, that particular style was just all wrong for Klitschko. Whereas, you know, let's face it, pretty much every other boxer in the world at the moment isn't all wrong for Klitschko, but Fury is. And you know, if it would have to happen, probably the earliest it could happen would be what, towards the end of 2016, because Fury will have the rematch, yeah. And presumably he's not going to want to lose all his world titles for not being able to face mandatories. So yeah, maybe just for him to keep his world titles, he's going to have a couple of fights. So maybe they could fight at the end of 2016. But yeah, it would just be huge if it happens.
It would be. Let's look at the undercard. Chris Eubank Jr., Spike O'Sullivan, Chief Support. Again, it's a decent fight. Should be fairly entertaining. Bit of needle. I'm not overly excited though, are you?
I really like the fight. It's just not, you know, it's kind of like, so the pay-per-view we had in May was an amazing card, yeah. with Joshua against a sort of, you know, former world title challenger, but, you know, three world title fights and like some brilliant fights. You know, if, you know, this fight could be a war. So I do think it's a really good fight. It's not the sort of greatest thing since Kevin sliced Mitchell, bread. Jorge Linares. Is sliced bread that amazing?
It's convenient.
It's pretty thin though.
Well, it depends if you get the thick sliced or medium, really.
No, but I like, you know, like a hunk of crusty bread.
I imagine
put some camembert on it.
I imagine that you'd struggle to slice bread. I'd imagine you'd make a mess of that.
How dare you? You've never seen me wield a
blade.
I've seen
you do a lot of things, and that's just how I imagine.
You've got to be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean. Earn your keep.
Okay, what about Kevin Mitchell? Kevin Mitchell is fighting for an interim.
Oh yeah, that's going to be a good fight.
Interim title.
I don't know much about Barroso, but he is dangerous.
He's very dangerous. I kind of don't want to really hang a world title on this matchup, particularly a WBA interim version of one.
I think he
but it's a must win for Kevin Mitchell. He loses this, and he loses it convincingly. It's done.
Yeah.
His world title dreams have gone. No question, surely.
But also, this is a, you know, if you view it more as an eliminator, final eliminator for Crawler's world title.
And that's all that these interim fights should be. Back in the day, this would have been an eliminator.
Yeah.
And that's why the whole thing frustrates me. But anyway, so Mitchell will be bang up for this, won't he?
Yeah, so I spoke to him at his public workout on Monday. He did look in really good shape, and he just seemed really confident. But Barroso is dangerous. However, Mitchell said he's going to use sort of the tactics he had for the Prescott fight, which I guess it means he's going to be, instead of just getting into a brawl, he's going to be boxing and moving and thinking. Which I still think, you know, when Kevin Mitchell is sort of on his game, that is really good to watch. And he's been in a lot of exciting fights in his career, pretty grueling fights as well.
He looks like a world beater for sections of fights.
Yeah.
Kevin Mitchell, an absolute unstoppable world beater. It's rare at this level that he can do that for an entire fight.
Yeah, and then he does get sucked into a battle and he does get hurt.
Tony Bellew also on the card, going for the vacant European cruiserweight title against Matthias Mastrnak. Now, this to me isn't an overly competitive one from what I've seen of Mastrnak. Bellew, I would make a big favourite in this. What about you?
I would defer to your better judgment. I think Bellew's still got a fair bit to prove at cruiserweight, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he has. Yeah.
Maybe he will just... What do you expect him just to... expect Tony just to outbox him?
I expect him to stop him, to be honest. I expect him to stop him. Also, he's got the Creed film approaching.
Yes.
When does that come out in this country?
I have no idea. I'm a Netflix guy.
Okay, Luke Campbell, your favourite?
I don't have favourites, I just tell it like it is. And he is... he is the best prospect in the country. Because, you know, obviously Joshua's extremely talented, but Luke is an even more seasoned amateur, and so he is much more polished. I don't know much about Ivan Mendy, but
no,
Luke
I
Campbell
don't.
Being Luke Campbell... I would expect him to win it in style.
Okay, right. Malignaggi also.
Yes, who hasn't wanted to see Paulie Malignaggi?
Against, go on, pronounce his new opponent.
Antonio Moscatiello.
Moscatiello.
Because this guy is a substitute for...
Branco.
Who is still boxing.
What do you mean?
Isn't this the Branco who boxed like Matthew Hatton?
Yeah. So he's
when
still,
I was young.
Yeah.
And the world
we were
was
both,
young.
Yeah, when we were both.
So much has changed.
So much younger. But yeah, no. That, I mean, to me, Paulie Malignaggi, a good guy, a talent, certainly at the end of his career. And really for me, the only thing I was kind of intrigued about was the novelty value of seeing Paulie Malignaggi win Let's not, you know, how more New York can you get than Paulie Malignaggi than winning a European title in London? And I quite like that as a story.
Yeah.
Now that's been taken away. No offence to Paulie.
Is it still for a European title?
Is it?
I believe so.
Oh, have they managed to do that? Oh, well, that's interesting. Oh, okay.
So we've still got that.
So we've still got that then. Brilliant. And that's the best fight on the card then. That's great. That's what we're watching now. Okay, so I didn't realise. I thought that they would bring, because it was such short notice that Branko had dropped out, they wouldn't be able to create a European title fight. Okay, well, there you go. That's worth watching.
But no, I think there will be some good fights in this.
Branko Sullivan,
Mitchell Barroso.
Yeah,
and I think we'll see some good performances. I'm not sure how Beli Mastinac's going to go, but Luke Campbell's always good to watch.
I think all in all, it's a very, 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 very good card. It is. It's very strong. And I think any of those, any of the fights that we've just focused on would stand alone as a main event in their own right, if it was just on a box office platform. On a Sky Sports platform.
I'm not sure if Paulie Malignaggi
entered. No, sorry. I meant the Mitchell and the Bellew fights.
Yeah, yeah. And Junior Spike.
Yes, sorry, and Junior Spike. But I don't know, there's something about it that is not screaming pay-per-view at me, with the exception of Joshua White, just because of Joshua's... his profile and the grudge.
Yeah, I think Joshua White is the most intriguing fight on the bill, but it could probably be the shortest.
It's fascinating, and do you know what? You know, I've said all that. I will happily pay for all that, happily, and I'm not going to be going, oh God, I've been ripped off. You know, I want to see that fight, so I'll pay for it.
You can invite some friends around.
But
I
can understand why people are a bit miffed about it. That's what I'm saying as well.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, I understand that. Is that why Mayweather has his fights on Mexican holidays? Because everyone goes around people's houses to party, and then those households will buy the pay-per-view amongst them.
It must be.
You should get some friends around.
I've got my little girl, I'm afraid, and friends tend to wake her up, which is not pretty.
Friends are awful.
Okay, so speaking of which, I've got to go and pick her up now. So we'll call...
Time.
That's it. On this. But it's been good. I think what we're going to see is going to be a fascinating fight. And what I really like about the matchup is it's two young, ambitious guys that are unbeaten. And too often... with heavyweights that are on the way up. Although they fight recognisable names, they're going in different directions. And this is good matchmaking. Yeah.
And if people don't want to pay for the pay-per-view, they can read the live blog for free. They'll love it. Or they can buy the magazine the following Thursday.
Yeah, so they could just make it a complete surprise and just wait for the magazine to come out.
This everyone should
do
that.
Could you imagine
that?
Doing that?
Oh, that would be glorious.
Could you imagine? I can't remember the last time where... I remember I used to pick up Boxing News and there would be a whole stack of results in there. I had no idea what happened.
So all we need to do is destroy television and then the internet.
Yeah.
And our own website.
Yeah, exactly. That's all we need to do.
All right, well, I'm busy tomorrow, but I'll get on that Friday.
Okay, well, I'll join you on Friday. Right, okay, well, thanks, everybody, for listening and for your continued support. There is a real, real in-depth feature for Joshua White in this week's magazine. There's also, we look at the undercard. There's also, excuse me, fascinating interview with Martin Murray, who reflects on his loss to Arthur Abraham. We also, for people that are kind of believing the negative hype about Tyson Fury, we've got a fascinating glimpse into his behaviour the week leading up to his fight with Fury, which is a real interesting glimpse. Sorry about my cough. There's also, we haven't mentioned it, but...
Are you about to die, Matt?
I haven't got any water, and as you know, I've been struggling a bit this week with my throat.
If you've got a biro, I can perform an emergency tracheotomy if that's going to help.
If you could.
Should we do that off air?
No, well, no, let's do it live.
All right, mate.
So, yeah, we've got Peter Quillen, Danny Jacobs, Fight Report, which is a cracker. I'm going to have to call time on this now. This is getting ridiculous.
But good amateur section.
Suffice to say, the
good contents page.
And we'll be back. Well, so one of us.
Yeah, one of us might make it back.
I don't know if I'm going to survive. Thanks for listening.